Hello, everybody. Jeff Mason and Kristen Farah, Simple Biz 360 podcast. We welcome you today. Thank you so much. Hey, if you like the show and you want to subscribe, if you're looking at the screen, lower bottom right hand corner, just hover over that favicon. You can press on there. You got to be signed in on YouTube to make sure you subscribe, but if you want to subscribe, so just make sure you're signed in, but that's how you do it. So we are so excited. Not only is Kristen a neighbor, but she is an athlete, a blogger, a solopreneur, freelance writer, works out of her home, and just so much exciting stuff. So I'm going to let you introduce yourself to everybody for a few minutes, and we'll go from there.
I am Kristen. I'm a recent graduate from Webster University. Big fan in this office, La Webster University grads. I own the Dudes Love Brunch clothing brand. I bartend, and I just recently got a job as a ghostwriter. So I'm on a lot of adventures.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we're so excited to have you here today. And right behind the glass back here, you guys hear me always talk about Dietz and Matt. Well, they are Webster grads as well. So we have a lot of folks in here other than myself that have gone to Webster in St. Louis. So we're really excited. Kristen's family lives right next to my wife and I, and I guess we've been neighbors now for 16 years. Wonderful, wonderful.
My gosh.
I know. Wonderful family, I have to say. Kristen's got three sisters, a great mom and dad, great dog. And so we just, I'm really pleased to be able to come to this juncture. And, you know, it's funny. I love just talking to people about their experiences, and you've got some highly competitive athletic background to you. And it's just, you know, so anytime you see somebody playing volleyball or something out in the cul-de-sac or in front of your house, you never know what they're going to turn into. But Kristen was a very accomplished athlete at Webster. In fact, I believe it was your sophomore year, led Division III in digs per set at 8.32 digs per set, but not only led Division III, led all of NCAA that year. So, you know, you're talking about a high level person that has a lot of independence built into the things they do, a lot of teamwork built into the things that you do, but just a lot of bravery and a lot of, spirit that feeds into the entrepreneurial vein. So we're going to be talking about that today, because that's really, you know, that's really going to be one of the nicest components of this interview that people can take with them and say, wow, I learned something from Kristen. And if nothing else, to just be brave enough to go out and do something. So life's journeys always fascinate me. And so just, you know, every entrepreneur has a beginning point where something germinates in them and they start to think about it. Where did that happen for you in your life? I mean, at what age did you think, you know, I'm gonna do something on my own?
So I take after my mom a lot, in the sense that I decide I'm going to do something, and even if there's not a path to get there, I'm gonna make my own path. Like, there's nothing that will stop me, because that's what I want to do. And so I never really thought that would go into me owning my own business, because I love being creative and I love writing and editing and art and everything. But I am not a lover of the taxes and setting up business accounts. And so I just have always pretty much been, if there's something I want to do, I'm going to do it. Like, I just have always had that confidence.
Interesting. So would you classify yourself, like, in high school as a daydreamer? Did you daydream a lot, or?
I was very motivated in high school. I liked getting good grades. And I was on the volleyball team, and I was on the soccer team and lacrosse team and, pole vaulting. I just wanted to try everything. I was part of theater for a second. Mm-hmm. It wasn't good. I was in makeup and couldn't do anything. I don't know. Daydreams seem kind of like a shot in the dark, and I'm very clear on what I want, and it can change at any given time, and then I'll go after that. But I know this is what I want to do.
Nice. And so many entrepreneurs are the doers. So they even, you know, they put their thoughts into action rather than just, you know, float around and wonder. So, yeah. So that goal-oriented was something that was part of you all along. Did your athletic background in college help you become a stronger goal setter now at this point in your life?
My coach in college really hammered in the idea that we needed to have really good short-term and long-term goals on the team, but I don't really have many long-term goals in my personal life just because I am changing so much all the time. I love change. I invite change. And so I know that I want to accomplish something, and then as soon as I'm accomplishing it, I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to go bigger or to completely change my path all around. So I'm super open to not having a set 5-year plan and having a set once I accomplish this, no matter how long it takes, right. I'm going to move on.
Right. But you continue to move forward always.
Yeah. Because it's fun.
Yeah, yeah, well, exactly. So so change as an athlete, improvement, seeing what you're doing wrong, making a correction, doing something right. Has that become part of your DNA as a writer, as a blogger, as a solopreneur so far?
Yeah, being coachable has definitely helped in all aspects of my life. Because in volleyball, you got to learn fast. If you make a mistake in a game and you have to learn, okay, she's hitting here. This is how her hand is placed. This is where she's going. You got to make that snap judgment change right then. And so in writing, it kind of helped me be more coachable through the editing process because it's really hard to take that criticism when you put everything, you put hours and hours into interviewing and writing and you love this piece of work you did. And then someone comes along and tears it apart and they say, this word's not good. You completely missed the message on this, blah, blah, blah. And you need it. You need that honesty. But it has helped me become a lot more accepting of that critique at that moment instead of getting angry and going through all those stages and then accepting it. Like, it's helped me get a faster turnaround on how I work.
Well, I mean, that's great because not everybody can separate that correctiveness and being humble enough to say, hey, this is helping me and helping me to make changes and do it better. But as an athlete, you know, I didn't play as competitively as you did, but you know, there was always that, ebb and flow of improvement, and to improve, you always had to be humble enough to take the criticism, no matter how, you know, writing my book, you know, I'm not an accomplished writer like you are, but writing my book was a very arduous process. I mean, it really was. Cause I had, you know, I'm just not groomed that way. So my editor, said, okay, first things first, are you willing to see, hear, and digest blunt comments?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, okay. Well, I didn't realize how blunt they would be, but you know what? It was never mean-spirited. It was always in the spirit of correctiveness. It was always in the spirit of you do want to improve, right? You do want to lessen your word count. You do want to say things more straightforwardly. Mm-hmm. You do want to make this as simplified as possible, right? Yeah, so we went through eight editorial revisions on both content and copy, which I thought was...
Did they all hurt?
No. You know, the first couple were eye-opening, you know?
Because
you're like reading some of these things going, wow, really? I mean, like, this is horrible. I'm like, really? But you know what? After that, it really became... I started to see her rhythm and understand... You know, what she was trying to flip me over to do and some of the cool things I'm sure as a writer, some of the things I took away from me were, you know, the echoing. Every time I write something now, I look at a paragraph and I go, I used the word customer 4 times. Let me use different words.
Yeah.
You know, I used the, you know, right? And you realize that I'm echoing too much. And so you can always find another word to replace a previously used word, right? And that was just one of the neatest exercises that came out of that for me. But very awesome. Now, Kristen writes a blog. It's on WordPress. It's called The Coffee House.
Yeah.
So that was something Tell us a little bit about that. You started that in college, correct? Is it a part of a class?
Yeah.
Is that
so
right?
My freshman year, I took this media class where I learned how to do video and edit. And as part of the class, we had to have a running blog that we posted consistently. There wasn't like a thing that you had to. So I did once a week, and I don't like black coffee. I never have. It's just gross. And so I just thought it would be interesting to go on this journey of me trying every black coffee from different places I could in the city, and seeing a journey of hopefully eventually me learning to like black coffee. And I, spoiler alert, still don't. And
that's so funny.
Yeah. So one of the early blogs I did, it was at the Peacock Diner, I think, on the Loop. And I just loved their bathroom. They had the best mirror. They had the best lighting. And I had to put it in my blog. And I did. And people who were reading it, which are really just my friends and my mom, loved it. They thought it was so funny. And so it became sort of this like stream of consciousness writing, whatever was going on in my head, and then a block of whatever the coffee made me think of and how it tasted, other than just like, this is gross, you know?
Right.
And then the end would be a bathroom review on how it looked, what they can do better, what's going on with it. And it was just kind of a quirky thing.
And so that was the formula for each following blog. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So no black coffee to this day. Do you like tea better?
Love tea. I gave up tea for Lent. It's been pretty hard, especially my friend was raving about this Thai tea she just had, and it sounds so good. I have tea every day.
Do you really?
I have at least 2 cups of tea every day, milk, sugar, everything, and now cold turkey, no tea for 40 days.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Yeah, no, I'm a coffee guy, and I went from, you know, milk to black about 5 years ago, and yeah, I live for some reason, the more bitter I like, you know, yeah, I don't know why, but I do. I love it, and love strong coffee. I love it, so, but who knows?
Really.
You know, my first cup of coffee wasn't until I was 18, and I worked in a factory, and you used to get it out of a machine. I worked a night shift from 12 to 8, and, you know, I was like, 4 in the morning. I'm like, well, 25 cents, you press a button, cup comes down, psh, you know, this thing comes out, and you're like, what is that? I mean, I couldn't drink one today, but you know, I mean, that's where my first cup of coffee, 18, and now I'm addicted. So,
awesome.
Oh, go figure. So you are you're a writer. And so generally writers have passions for, you know, what type of writing they really like to do. So in your freelance career, mm-hmm. and yeah, you're saying you're a ghostwriter, what's the flavor of writing? Is it public relations? Is it lifestyle? Is it news? What is it?
Definitely not news. My favorite thing I've written was for a class, and it was on the stripper. She was 20. She was pregnant, and we were in the middle of a McDonald's sitting down. Her boyfriend was there, and she was just telling me about her life and how like she made a lot of money one night, and she was sexually assaulted a different night, and just kind of the highs and lows of her career. And I really love hearing people's stories in the sense that if I'm writing for a newspaper type mm-hmm. publication, I like doing those profile stories mm-hmm. on people because it's just really interesting and everyone has their own character and how they talk and what happened to them and what they're doing. And I just love hearing that.
Yeah, interesting. So it's more of a lifestyle kind of a personality, you know, mm-hmm. you know, thing. So yeah, I've always said, and I do believe this, I mean, you know, I've got the vantage point of talking to you as a 62-year-old, and you know, I've always said I just think that everyone has such a unique story. And I'm waiting for someone to do this, but I really literally think that you could go on any block in any town, in any county, in any state in the country, and you could just do a chapter on each home. You could go from, you know, this house to that house to that house to that house, end up with 15 chapters, and it would be the most unbelievable book you've ever read, because I just think life is so much stranger than what we could make up. And when you hear some, but everybody's got stories.
Yeah, I actually pitched, there's this company called Sleeve a Message. They make coffee sleeves. Yeah, so I pitched them this idea. It didn't get picked up, but it was kind of a coffee for conversation thing. And I went down on the loop and I bought a coffee and I just found a random guy on the street. And I was like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Here's a coffee if you'd like it. It was in the winter. It was cold. And he just started talking to me. And he's like, I'm on my way to the bus stop. I just found out I have colon cancer because the last time I went to the bus stop, I had to walk a couple miles and all of a sudden I started bleeding and there was a pool of blood around me. I had no idea where I was coming from. And then I fainted. And the next thing I know, I woke up in an ambulance. People were calling, like, and he was telling me his life story. And it was just 5 minutes. It was a 5 minute conversation. And it was this random guy on the street that wow. I had just random. Right. So yeah, everyone yeah, has that. Something they're
That's
ready to talk
wild.
About.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always said that when I work with sales reps and, always said that, if somebody seems to be in a bad mood on their side of the phone, just take a step back for a second, because you never know what they're going through, what happened that morning, what happened the night before. You never know, the story you just told. I mean, we don't realize that, all the time that people go through some of these things that seem almost impossible or, crazy or amazing. And, they wear it on the phone when you talk to them sometimes. Yeah. So you have to just be careful. But so as a reader, do you like to read or do you like to write?
Love reading. Always loved reading. Started pulling all-nighters in the third grade reading. Would have a book under my desk during math class in sixth grade while reading. Like, I'm obsessed.
Really?
Yeah, I want to be a book editor so I can just read all day as my job.
Wow, how cool is that? So what, fiction, nonfiction, what's your favorite?
Fiction, like young adult fiction, which is kind of embarrassing to say as a 22-year-old. But, it's awesome. I love it. And if I'm a book editor for a young adult, that's my job. I just get to read it all day.
It's interesting. Yeah, I have... Yeah, I have a tough time reading. I mean, I've adopted a more of a likeness to it later in my life. But still, I mean, if I do 12 books a year, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you probably do way more than that.
Yeah, I think I just got 7 books the other week from the library.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That's wild. Well, yeah, it's good. So the ghostwriting. Now, is that something that is, how does that work? Is that something that's like a contract? Is that something mm-hmm. you, and it is. Okay, so are you responsible for a certain amount of... articles per month or something? Or
well, this is for the company is called Story Terrace, and essentially anybody, you're not, it doesn't have to be, it's for books, but it doesn't have to be for you wanting to publish and sell your book. It can be, my grandma has this really great story, we need someone to interview her and write it down to pass down through our family so you can read it, but as a ghostwriter, my name won't be on it. And so it'll be whoever, like John, bought the package. It'll say author John, and I just write it.
How cool is that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, and how important is that, too? Because we're just finding that out in my family. You know, we're discovering history in our family as of 3 years ago. We never knew about. Yeah, we didn't have the dots connected correctly. And I mean, so, to the point where, just not to digress and take away from your interview, but just, my part of my dad's side of the family, they were homesteaders. And I never, the term homesteading just went one ear and out the other. But really, homesteading is, they got granted some land, 151 acres, that you had to go through this process in the 1800s. This was out in Nebraska, where you had to go through a lot of these legal gyrations to end up getting the deed to that land. And it was I don't know how many years process it was, but, we found out that we had relatives, 11 kids and 2 adults living in a 12-foot by 14-foot house in South Central Nebraska back in the mid 1800s. And we knew Nebraska, but we never connected the dots correctly. And yeah, I finally went out and worked with a historian at the Homesteading Museum out near Beatrice, Nebraska. And this historian ended up looking up things for me. And so it's very interesting because, I've often thought, who's gonna take this story, bottle it up, and wrap it up in a bow and pass it on down to the kids and grandkids? Because, nobody really had any... interest in finding about it. Yeah. It's interesting that that's the service you're providing, because I would think that's so cool right now.
Yeah.
I'll probably have to talk to you about that. So, you know, but, well, very cool. So that's interesting. So now, here you are, you're like your mom, you're very driven. You don't, I would assume, and if you could elaborate on this, cause I think entrepreneurs will love hearing this. You don't let, naysayers or negative talk disrupt your go forwardness, do you?
I mean, most people, when I told them my company is going to be called Dudes Love Brunch, gave me that kind of soft smile that they were uncomfortable because they didn't want to tell me the truth. Like, that's a stupid name. That's weird. No one's going to like it. And so that was hard to see because I was just watching people kind of lie to my sure. face, trying to appease me. But I loved it. I always thought it was hilarious. It started as an inside joke. And I thought this is unique. This is going to be my name. And then I started thinking of all these companies like Apple. That's such a stupid name. There is already the fruit, the apple. Why would we do this? And now it's a household name. You think of the technology before the fruit. Like, everyone has to start somewhere. That's just what you got to remember. Like, you're going to make mistakes. I made so many and I was 2 months in and I was like, this is just a waste of money at this point. But I love the idea of investing in myself. Like, I'm finally making good money. I'm bartending, and I'm saving some and I'm spending some, but I'm also spending a lot on me and my goals and what this brand wants to be for me. And so, I mean, you just got to keep remember, like, you're investing in yourself, and that's the best investing you can do right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you're so, and you're so right. And in this time frame, you know, I've often thought that the post COVID, we thought we'd be out of COVID by now. So I thought last year would be an interesting, we'd really see a lot of a big blow up in entrepreneurial spirit, because you had a lot of people furloughed, a lot of people mm-hmm. let go. And I just thought, you know, I think this is really going to burst at the seams. And, you know, that hasn't happened yet, because we're still in this, you know, we're still in this yawned period of COVID, if you will. But the bravery to step out and do something like that, invest in yourself, invest in your brand. I mean, this is something you've developed and thought of. So explain to the folks, and by the way, it's a dudeslovebrunch.com if you want to go there. Explain to the folks that what's the essence, what's the origin of this name, and what's the direction this company's going to go? What are you trying to do with it?
Yeah, so my friend was going on a Hinge date, and we were talking about what good first date places were, and I said brunch, and she said, dudes do be loving brunch. And I just thought, that was so funny. And this was months before I even thought I wanted to start a clothing brand. And I had made sticker mock-ups just because I thought it was a funny idea and I'd love a sticker or a t-shirt about it, you know? And then all on social media and TikTok, I just saw all these influencers getting their own sweatshirts and their own designs on their sweatshirts and sweatpants. And I was so jealous because that is my brand. That's always been my brand. I am a sweatshirt comfy person. And I was just getting so jealous the more I saw. I'm like, this is mine. Like, I should be doing this. This is so annoying. And it just got to the point I was like, I need to do this. Like, I want to wear my own stuff. I want to design my own stuff. I want to wear my own stuff. And there was never a thought of, should it not be Dudes Love Brunch? Because it just was like, it was perfect. No one else has a name close right. to that. Like, I sure. got all the domain names.
Sure.
I have, not a trademark. I have a trademark going out, and you have to kind of do some research sure. to make sure it's going to go through. No one has a trademark close to Dudes Love Brunch. Like, this is a pretty original thought, yeah. which I thought was kind of unique. And, I've just always stuck with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, very cool. So, what is the tagline? There's a little bit of a Sunday message, a little bit of a Monday message in your tagline.
Oh yeah. It's on my website.
Dressing for Sunday dressing.
Oh yeah.
For
styled for Sunday, comfort for Monday.
Right, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The idea is that these sweatshirts and sweatpants are cool enough for your street style, your brunching. But they're cozy enough for you to do Zoom meetings all day Monday morning and sleep in and lounge around.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, so true. I mean, gosh, you know, working, I don't know if you see right behind Kristen is our Remote Biz 360. And we came up with that little just logo last year because so many people have been furloughed. So many workers have been brought into the home working out of their house. And when you do that, you do wear a lot more pajamas, you wear a lot more sweatpants, you wear a lot more casual clothing, obviously. And sweatpants are, they're comfy. I think we've, you know, especially in the last 30 years, we've seen that transition from, you know, wearing jeans at home and things that required leather belts to, you know, drawstring, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Now sweatpants have taken on all kinds of different looks and feels, but still it's that comfortableness, you know, factor that you're addressing. Yeah. And would everyone, and you're right, all the personal brands out there seem to have those, that comfy clothing, if you will. Now, when you first told me the name, I thought for about 5 seconds, wow, that's kind of different. Then I went for a run and I came back and I told my wife and she's like, wow, that's a different name. And I thought, you know, but honey, think about it. What do you always accuse me of doing? I mean, when my girls were little, whenever there was leftovers on the plates, I would always mop it up, you know, give me the leftovers. I would always eat. I mean, we love brunch. I mean, seriously, like you couldn't map it out any better because it's like, oh, we're going out for dinner. Yeah. Or we're going out for brunch. Oh, this means I can eat to, you know, I can gorge myself.
And drink. Yes. In the middle of the day.
And so here you go to brunch. Oh, it's $25. Oh, I'm not, my wife says, oh, I'm not going to eat that much. I said, I probably will, you know? And here we go. We just got this smorgasbord of all kinds of different things. And, you know, so I get it. I connect with it because yes, dudes do love brunch much better than, you know, just going out for a piece of fish and, you know, I'm just kidding. But most of us, you know, who grow up, you know, loving to eat. Yes, we love brunch. So
oh,
that's
yeah.
So cool. So cool. So DLB, are you going to go? I saw that. Are you going to go as DLB eventually, you think? Or
Either one. That's more of a logo. Yeah. We have our first hat mock-up we made the other day. My boyfriend is exclusively wearing it.
Nice.
But yeah, that's more of
just the logo.
Yeah, the logo. I think it'll probably be on the next sweatshirt too. But yeah, I'm fine. I refer to it as DLB. It's just easier.
Yeah. Now, are you trademarking? Are you going through the trademark process yourself or are you hiring somebody to do that?
No, I'm very cheap and I am very confident. And I don't know anything or I didn't know anything about trademarking or business in general before I started this. And my parents are in business. My uncles are in business. So they've been a lot of help. Mm-hmm. But this trademark thing, I just Googled it and my dad was really pushing. You need this before you launch. No one takes this. Mm-hmm. It's pretty unique. And I was like, all right. And so it's scary because it's a lot of money for me. And there's a majority of your first trademarks don't get approved and it's a long process. And so there's a 3-month period before it even gets looked at.
Right.
But you're covered for those 3 months. And so I applied, I spent the money and then I launched online and I said for 3 months, I'm good. Like no one can take this.
Right.
I can sue you if you do. And I can just market the hell out of my brand without fear. And after that, if it doesn't go through, I may not do it again, but I don't know. It's just, it's a process. You gotta be on top of it.
Yeah. And I will say, and as an entrepreneur myself, yes, I will say to everybody that is, I believe I put a lot of weight and importance on that as well. So when I went through the trademark process, I used LegalZoom. So I went to the LegalZoom folks to do that. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you know, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $750, $700 to get it done. But you're right. What they did is basically took the trademark that I wanted, gave me that 3-month period where they're, you know, behind the scenes doing things. And then they sent me eventually about an 800-page PDF that had all the different variations of what my brand was and closeness to it. And, you know, I have a pinwheel incorporated in mine that it goes along with the logo itself. And so, yeah, when they came back and finally said, yeah, you're approved and you're trademarked. And then after that, I went for the registration symbol. So that little R, which to me was important because that means it to show, I believe, that you're doing commerce under the trademark, you know, banner, if you will. And now you've graduated to a registration, which is, you know, a sealed, you know, that's done. The U.S. Patent, U.S. Patented, what is it? USPTO. I don't know what that stands for. United States Patented Trademark Organization. Yeah. So the USPTO finally gave me my registration trademark, which just about 3 months ago.
Congrats.
Yeah. So I switched everything over to the R. And so, again, I think it in this day and age, it's so important if you're out there considering something like this. I do agree with Kristen and her family. You know, that is something you want to protect all your investments of time, money to get the most return out of it. And so, you know, very cool. But you're, you know, good luck. Let me know how that works out doing it on your own because I was not that brave. But, you know, at any rate. In terms of comfy clothing going forward, are you going to move into a, I think right now you have a pullover sweatshirt top. Are you going to move into zipper fronts or what? I mean,
so. Originally I had three designs. They were all pullovers. They were pastel colors. I had created a whole brand strategy, marketing strategy on Instagram for it, done photo shoots for it, was posting about it leading up to the drop. And then, I couldn't get any of those sweatshirts in. They were all out of stock everywhere. I was scouring online. I have, the tax ID so I can go wholesale. And none of the wholesales had what I needed. And it was I had to completely switch up. So I did all this marketing, all this branding in this time, a month leading up to it, showing my followers, this is what I'm promoting. This is what you're getting. And the day of the drop, I instead had like this pastel orange hoodie and it was a completely different design. It said Monday Mimosas across the back. And it was just so completely different. I did a 180 and cause that's what I could get in. And, I'm pretty particular about sweatshirts. And so this next one will be even better and, a bit thicker and a bit shorter, but oversized. Yeah. I don't know. Cause I like that feel.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I personally have the crew necks just cause they were the photo shoot ones. But we never actually sold the crew necks. But we did market those. They're all over my Instagram because that's what I thought I was going to sell.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, and again, Kristen, you're relying on pre-made product that you're decorating after the fact. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's, you know, when you get into apparel brand building, I was in that business for a while. Your sister and I have talked about it a little bit as she's in the apparel business as well. And, you know, it's just one of those things that unless you have go out and make thousands of pieces of apparel that meet your fabric minimums and meet your factory production minimums and you spend, you know, umpteen thousands and thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars to do it, you know, you have to rely on buying these open stock goods. And yeah, I mean, as there's so, and just, you know, don't get frustrated because so many things have changed with COVID, with overseas raw material sourcing. I mean, you know, it's just, there's so much going on right now and so many issues with, you know, bringing in raw materials from across the globe because of COVID, mm-hmm. believe it or not. I mean, it's just, and you know, my sales agency, we deal with the struggles of that all over. And yeah, so it's just it's unfortunate, but hey, you pivoted.
Yeah.
Pivot. Wow. We haven't done any of that in 12 months, have we? That's all we seem to be doing, right? I mean, we're just pivoting, moving. The goalposts are moving. Now what do we do? Oh my gosh. You know, so
yeah, here you go. Toes.
Yeah, you keep on your toes for sure. So in terms of if you had your druthers, would you stay in the pastel?
What?
Druthers. No, is that an old man term?
I don't know what that is.
So if you just your preference.
Okay.
Basically another word, older word for it. My wife's always like, could you stop using those big words?
I don't generally,
but if you had your choice or druthers, would you stay in the pastel color range for the guys or would you go, are you going to go, you see yourself going into darker colors and stuff?
I wanted each new drop to be different than the last pivoting. Yep. But I loved the original designs I had just because they were my babies. And then I made the Monday Mimosas design, and I was like, this is so much cooler. Like, this is what my brand was supposed to look like. And I love the pastels. So yeah, I think they're really trendy right now. Yeah. And I'm super excited to ride that wave. But as far as the designs go, I just got a lot more cooler with it and a lot more stylish and a bit more mainstream and funky instead of Dudes Love Brunch across chest.
Yeah. So yeah, are the open goods, open stock goods like that? Are you finding that a lot of the people do have the pastel? I mean, you said it's a trend right now. Are they making goods to fit that trend?
Yeah. It's just a matter, I can find the color. I am just really picky about the look and the fabric. So I want it to be a little heavier, and I want it, the hood to be wider have a drop shoulder. Like, I'm pretty specific on what I know I want, and it's hard finding that in a decent price range.
Yeah. Now, are you looking at poly cotton? Are you looking at, are you looking at polyester? Are you looking at just straight 100% cotton? What is it?
I like the blend. Definitely not 100% polyester. Yeah. I think right now mine are 50-50. Which are comfy.
And it's good for low shrinkage too that way. So that's nice.
Yeah, I haven't noticed. And I had to switch my vinyl I was using. I got a lot higher quality vinyl. I just did a restock. I just announced it yesterday, actually. And I had run out of all my white vinyl when I was initially making them. Oh my gosh. One of my hundreds mistakes I've made is I started selling before I'd even made the sweatshirts, and I sold out the first night into that morning that I put all my sweatshirts up, and I hadn't made a single sweatshirt. And so I was just crying in my room trying to get them finished all night so I could put them out. And I have this bartending job I have to go to at night, and I was just so overwhelmed. And so I had run out of my white vinyl that I needed. I bought some and had really good reviews, and it wasn't, like, I had to refund some people's money. And so now, like, I have this really good vinyl. I invested in really good vinyl. And I'm just excited that I'm not going to have at least those problems anymore.
Now, is the vinyl something that helps you register the actual print on the garment, or what is the vinyl?
No, the vinyl is it's a heat press vinyl. Okay. So it melds to the fabric. I have a Cricut, cuts it out any design I want.
Okay. So that's what you're talking. So instead of screen printing, you're using vinyl heat application basically. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So that's
it.
What
does
it is.
Not smell good. I was taking over my little sister's room, and then she went to college. So I moved in there and moved all my business down to my older sister's room, 'cause she's in Omaha right now. And so now that room is just full of cardboard boxes and this huge heat press and two big tables that I have everything spread out on.
So you've got a legitimate little factory going on. That is so cool. That is so cool. So do you see yourself intersecting your blogging with Dudes Love Brunch eventually? I mean, is there any way that comes together?
Yeah. A lot of my family has been wanting me to kind of transition from rating coffee to going to brunch and just like talking about my experience there. And that it's a good idea. And it's not like I have this huge following on my blog where they'd be like, whoa, 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 what are we doing here? I don't know, that it just feels like that would be inauthentic to what it started out as, which I get can sound silly and like it's super easy to pivot. But it's definitely in the back of my head to do that, 'cause I do love writing. But I really love doing tea parties, and I think that would be fun to have a branch of Dudes Love Brunch be a tea party and baking service.
Now, when you say tea party, can you paint a picture for us? What is that? Is it having a bunch of friends over and actually having a tea party?
Yeah. I spend months on Pinterest, like looking at everything I'd want to make. It's mostly like intricate pastries and desserts. And after I get enough built up, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to have this tea party. I give my friends or my family a date who is ever invited. It's pretty exclusive. and then I spend that whole week leading up to it baking every day. This, I had one last week, and the week prior, from 10 a.m. to midnight, I was baking all day. And I just planned it out. And then that Saturday or Sunday, there was a theme, and I just kind of vomit all this food on the table. And I say, look, here, come to my tea party. And we have a huge spread of tea. Again, love tea. Couldn't have any because it was Lent. But yeah, I love tea parties. And I'm a good baker. Like I used to want to be a baker on the weekends and a cardiologist during the week. It didn't turn out, but that was always my dream.
Wow. No kidding. Well, and it's funny, we're doing an interview with some ladies that opened up a business in Wentzville, Missouri, just recently, and it's called From Scratch Bakehouse. And it's really cool, so you have to catch it. It's going to be the podcast after yours.
Did you go there?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's an order by phone, then pick up, or order online, then
you pick up
the food. Well, they have a really cool house set up. It's down in old town Wentzville, really cool house to set up as a meeting place. So they definitely have that portion of their business plan to meet, you know, for networking groups and, mm-hmm. you know, companies that want to have a little outing, and then they would actually bake for that particular purpose. But we, for Christmas morning, we got some gluten-free coffee cake made by them, and I picked it up the day before Christmas. That's how I got to know the team of owners, Kara and Julie. And I mean, it was just, it was an eye opener that, you know, to your point, I mean, there's just so much, baking that could be done and people want done.
Yeah.
And so rather than have a shop open up where you walk in and just mill around and go, I'll take one of those, to, you know, you basically just order ahead of time and then you pick up. So everybody, you know, I was looking at all these pickups when I went, and I was like, wow, holy smokes. But, very cool. So I did not, you're my neighbor. I did not know, you were a big baker.
It's kind of like a pipe dream. I just got my first apron the other day. Love it. It's a big game changer, wiping my dirty hands on my apron instead of having to go change clothes and throw them in the laundry because I accidentally wiped my dirty flour butter hands on my clothes.
Well, you know, I don't know if you remember, but once in a while around Christmas time, we drop off some cookies
with the chips in them.
Yes.
Bomb. Yeah. So good.
Okay. So that was part of my shtick since the mid 90s is I would bake cookies to hand out to customers. And then I spent 2 weeks in December, driving around to all my customers and hand delivering the cookies. And it's just a good time to, you know, say, hey, thank you very much for the business and let's talk a little bit. But I got to the point where I was doing about 2,600 to 2,900 cookies at Christmas. And it was anywhere from, 22 hours to 29 hours in the kitchen. Taking my whole kitchen over.
Yeah, you need an industrial kitchen aid.
Yeah, but then I started saying, okay, that we got to get this improved. So I got down to where I could do about 100, and I think this last year I averaged about 142 cookies an hour, or 2 years ago. So I got it down where I could really just, you know, maximize the space on the cookie sheets. I just, every time I was done putting things on the cookie sheets, I had two cookie sheets waiting. Then I was mixing next batch, and then I had all the raw materials, you know, everything right there, all the measuring cups. So I got it down to where I could just, you know, I wasn't losing any time in motion, but I had to shorten. My wife's like, you can't do 29 hours in the kitchen again this year, you know.
So, were you enjoying it, or were you at the end just a menace and needed sleep?
Yes, it became arduous at the end. But you know what? I revamped, once I revamped it, the pleasure that you get, just your comment, just what you said right there is, you know, indicative of what so many of my customers would say. And I mean, I have a guy in Omaha. I would go up there in the summer. I'd meet him in Omaha in the summer, and he'd go, hey, wait 1 second. Before you leave, I got to get something for you. I go, sure. And he comes back and he gives me the box that I gave him the cookies in last December. I'm saying, what are you giving me the box back? Dude, because this box is bigger than the ones you give me years before. So I want this one back this year. I'm like, really? He goes, we love those cookies. so many people flipped out on those potato chip cookies.
They're so good.
Oh my gosh. And so, yeah, really, it's, you know, it just, I love seeing a smile on someone's face. You know, I do what I do at Simple Biz just to help people. And you know what? If I can change one little thing about somebody's company or the way they do business, you know, I that gives me joy at this point, you know, just to see somebody go, hey, the light bulb went off, that worked, thank you so much. And you know, I'm better for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm better for reading that page. I'm better for hearing that podcast. I changed something and it did. It made a customer happy. I love hearing those stories. So, you know, I cookies were the same way. It was like seeing somebody smile, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, so cool. But now, you know, just one of those little things. So thinking about, you know, business, and you haven't been in it that long, but here at Simple Biz, one of the big tenets that we just focus on, and I'll, you know, you're a bartender, so I'll transfer it over to, you know, your neck of the woods there. But are you looking at ways to create a better customer experience, ordering experience, not just the product, but the experience of ordering through Dudes Love Brunch? Is that something you're looking at?
Yeah. So originally I had this big grand plan for Hauschka package because I wanted it to look really great. I wanted you to be excited to receive the package, not just the sweatshirt or sweatpants. And I, thankfully, my first order, I just dropped off to a friend and she opened it and called me like an hour later and said, how many others have you packaged? And I thought she was going to be like, this is so great. I loved it. I can't wait for other people to love it. And she said, I'd been wrapping it in this black tissue paper and putting a really cool wax stamp seal on it. And she said the wax seal melted the tissue paper to her sweatshirt and she couldn't get it off. And I had packaged one other one that I had to mail out that day. And it just completely ruined the sweatshirt. So I just had to scrap that whole idea. And I was just like, we're just doing the sweatshirts. I have a brunch and rally written again with my Cricut and vinyl on the outside of my poly mailers. But other than that, yeah, I tried it in the very first. I thought a lot about it. And then it just, I had two sweatshirts ruined that I had to find how to replace really fast. I was like, ugh. So I'm back to the drawing board on that one.
Okay. Yeah. So the customer experience, it's an important thing. And we always go back. I read a book by Scott Bedbury back in the, he wrote it in the mid 90s. He had been on the marketing team at Nike. And then he went from the marketing team at Nike. He went over to Starbucks and I guess somewhere in the 90s. And I know people who watch this show every week are going to go, oh, he's going to go down that path again, but it's really apropos. And I don't mind keep talking about it. Cause it's really, you know, it's a big company doing something that we all should be doing, but they did. He said, hey, let's do the big dig. Let's do we're going to call this the big dig. And we're going to find everything out about coffee. We're going to find everything out about the history of coffee houses. And then we're going to talk to people. We're going to try to figure out, you know, what our brand identity is here. And when it was all said and done, to simplify their findings, they found out that they were an atmospheric brand. So here I would think, you know, I would think just off the cuff, they're going to be a product-driven brand. You know, they're going to be coffee, beans, and, you know, coffee-driven brand. They found out they were an atmospheric brand. And in essence, their CEO, Schultz, one day was getting a cup of coffee from a barista, and he was talking to the barista about, you know, this. And the barista said, you know what, Mr. Schultz, we don't serve coffee to people here. We serve people coffee. And, you know, that's really what they found out, is they're in the people serving business, not the coffee serving business. You know what I mean? And it's the experience of going into the Starbucks that they realized was the important thing. It was the atmospheric, and it was, these are people that just happened to be drinking coffee. They could have been people buying cupcakes, probably. They could have been people, you know, buying bubblegum, you know, buying magazines, books, whatever. But they realize it's these people put emphasis on coming in here. And so when we share things on Simple Biz 360, it's all about, you know, if you own the restaurant, if you own your business, if you own a digital marketing company, if you own this, it's not always the product that you have to be concerned about. It's that experience. And my daughter told me the same thing. She goes, Dad, they have these they have these present opening parties on Instagram all the time where you unveil how the thing is packed and like, what? But when you look at it and you really study it, what they're saying is just like what you're saying. It's the experience of getting the product out of the box, the whole thing. How did you order it? How did it come? What did Kristen, how did she interact with me in between the order process and the delivery? Voila, here it is. You know, it's the whole thing. And we really, as business owners, and I would encourage you too, is just, you know, don't overlook that, because it's really so many times it comes down to the experience. Bathrooms and restaurants, huge experience factor for me. You know, you said you critiqued the bathrooms in coffee houses, huge thing. Many people don't come back to a restaurant because of the bathrooms.
Are you one of those people?
No, but I...
Me neither.
But there are things that, you know, I hate not having a paper towel and having to take my shirt and putting the shirt on the handle. And I love to go in places that have doorless, have handleless doors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, or if they have handles, they've got the paper towels right there and the waste basket right there. So you can, you can wipe off, you can grab the door handle, hold it with your foot, throw it in, and you're out. You haven't touched anything. I hate the whole touching process. And, you know,
I love paper towels, hate hand dryers.
Yeah.
It's never enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you got to really take a look at things. And unfortunately, you know, I've said this about, you know, I travel for my job. I stay in hotels 100 nights a year. I have until COVID for many, many years. And I do a ton of traveling. And I'm going to tell you right now, you know, the sad thing about the germ warfare we're involved in is, you know, I've watched, because I'm an observer, I watched for decades, 50% of the men that go into a public restroom do not wash their hands. So then they're coming out and touching the bottle. Oh, I want this. Nah, go out here and get the Snapple. I'll do the Snapple. Nah, I don't want the apple. I want the cranberry. You know, so now, you know, the guy just, you know, did all this stuff in the bathroom. Now he's out, you know, touching everything. And you come along half hour later. Yeah. And, oh, let me see that water. Why I want that water. And, well, you just picked up good old Billy Joe's, you know, I'm just kidding. But, you know, but that's really a sad state of affairs. And so, you know, I just don't think that's changed much from what I can see.
I don't know. But on the topic of, like, you're selling more than your product. And so before I did anything, when I was thinking about what my brand was going to be, I made this mood board. And it's now the header for my website. And it's the very first 6 posts I did on Instagram. And it's... You're selling an experience. Like, I'm trying to get you to believe you wear my clothes. This is who you are. This is, or who you want to be. And it's as important to making the sale as how cool your clothes are.
Yeah. So that's what that is. I didn't know what I was looking at. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just a mood board.
Wow. It makes sense now. Very cool. So see, you're feeding right into it. You understand it's giving somebody a feeling. That's really what they're buying.
Yeah, definitely. They want, it's that and the status. I don't really have the status with my brand at all right now because I don't have a lot of recognition.
Right.
But that's why you go to Starbucks, right, is because you want the Starbucks cup. You want to post it, or you want to just feel like, oh, I'm one of those people now.
Right, right. Interesting. Very, very interesting. So you're in the entrepreneurial zone. You're a solopreneur. So what advice could you give, if anything, to people out there who are rubbing their chin at home going, I want to do something like what she's doing?
Yeah, just do it. Like, do it. If you have to know how much you're willing to spend. It's, you're investing. So just like when you're investing in Tesla, you have to know how much you're willing to lose, how much you're willing to spend, how much you're willing to lose, and be comfortable. You may not ever make a profit. I haven't even broken even yet on all the stuff I've had to buy,
sure,
you know? And I'm comfortable with that because I know I'm investing in myself and I know who I am. I know I'm going to get this done. And if you're not that kind of person, you can still do it. You just need somebody who's going to tell you the truth and hold you accountable and get you to say, hey, you have these orders to fulfill. You need to be up at 8 a.m. doing this or stay up till 2 a.m. doing this. Like, you got to hold yourself accountable or have someone to hold you accountable, but do it. Like, just start. Just like, if you don't do it now, you're not going to do it. There's always going to be a reason not to do it. You just got to throw yourself in it. You can learn as you go. You definitely kind of should prepare, but I didn't really prepare. I just started it and I was like, all right, I guess this is where we are now.
Interesting. So, yeah. So, you know, I think you're, you know, spot on. And, you know, when I think of other advice I've heard recently that kind of parallel that, I heard a gentleman recently talk about podcasters and said, you know, don't do a show for the people who don't listen to your show. Do the show for the people who listen to it. But, you know, there's just so much confidence in who you are and how you're going about things. But I think your message is, you know, just go forward, follow your dream, and don't look back. I mean, is that right?
Yeah. If I had a tagline, it'd be invest in yourself. That's the thing I'm most proud of with what I'm doing, is that I'm using my money that I'm earning and I'm putting it into my dreams. I'm not putting it into some swimsuit that I'm going to wear once and not throw away, but whatever. Like, I'm doing this to help further my dreams, help further my careers, do what I want to do. I'm working for myself, and it's hard and it's a struggle, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I want to be doing. I'm investing in my future and my reality.
Are you know, your classmates and are your friends or similar age? Are you guys is that part of your vernacular now, talking about the branding, you know, your own brand, being your own brand? I mean, is that something that comes up in conversation or not?
As a joke, like, my brand has always been "Hi, I'm Comfy," but that's about as far as it goes, because none of the people I'm friends with, and me included, are influencers at all on social media. But if you are, or if you want to be, that's definitely something you have to figure out to a T, and you have to have a niche community that you want to break into. But yeah,
I've never, you know, I've never heard a lot of people talk about it, but you hear, you know, I just hear it chirping in the background that, you know, Google yourself once in a while, see what happens when you Google yourself, you know, be conscientious about your own brand. I'm thinking, well, if you don't have a business, you're not doing what, I mean,
oh, jobs.
Yeah.
You gotta have a selling point.
Yeah.
In your cover letter and everything, you gotta have that selling point.
So something unique to you.
Oh yeah. So I have a couple intros. One is that I fell into quicksand when I was in Ireland. The other is that idea that in third grade, I was reading all night. I was pulling all nighters before I had to get up and go to school because I couldn't put down this book, which I'm assuming is what book publishers want to hear, that I have this passion for reading.
Sure.
But yeah, you have to brand yourself on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Yeah. You have to do that for a job.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, very cool. So what did I forget to ask any question that you want to give the answer to?
I don't think so.
Okay. So we will put your credentials up there. So folks, if you go on to the YouTube version of this podcast, and you're going to see a little thing called Show More, and you just click on that, and that will have Kristen's contact information for social media, at least for the website.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to give us others, we'll put others up there. But for every person we have on, that's one of the things we do, and have you, you know, have your people be able to get in touch with you. So, no, thank you so much for sharing with us. And we always have so much fun at the end of every show. We love rock and roll, love music. Music's very, you know, and I think you're probably like that. You're very, you know, I don't know, I get inspired by other things, by, yes, coaches, by bosses, but music has always been my gravitas. And so we always ask our guests to pick out a favorite song of theirs that meant something to them, you know, generally old classic rock and roll, but if not, anything that comes to mind.
This is not old classic rock and roll, but it's this band called Mount Joy, and it's their song Julia. It's just, it's just a really sweet feel-good song that has not gotten old. It's really cute.
Mount Joy, Julia. Very cool. Thank you so much. It has been absolute pleasure having you on. It's been a pleasure to live next to your family. I mean this. You so yeah. They're so great. What a great experience having, you know, just neighbors that are so nice like that. So, you know, it's been awesome watching you grow up, and here you are. And man, we wish you all the best. And would you come back in a couple years to give us an update on Dudes Love Brunch?
Yeah, I hope I'm a millionaire and I will bring a gift next time.
And so one of your friends one day said, "Dudes be loving brunch," and here you are, right?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for coming in. Folks, thank you very much. If you want to subscribe again, we would love to have your subscription if you like the show. And we just thank you for tuning in. Remember to always respond to every inquiry, follow up, but most important, follow through. And remember, customer perception is customer reality. So anything you can do to make sure you shape that customer reality to be a good one, please do it. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.